Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. This is episode 40, in which we look back at episodes 31 to 39. Episode 31 was a review of all the previous episodes. Within 60 minutes, we did clips from many of the 30 episodes to give quick clips from those shows so people new to the podcast could get a taste of each show. As it was clips from so many episodes in episode 31, I'm not going to pick selective clips here. What I would just recommend is listening to episode 31 because it's fantastic content from our guests. Episode 32 was on reform, and I discussed whether interviews with experts in family law cases should be recorded and the pros and cons of that. Given a humble shoplifter is given the right to a recording of their interview, why isn't a parent given the same right when the future of their children is at stake? CAFCAS and expert witnesses such as psychologists or psychiatrists are frequently criticised by parents for lying about the parents. You would think that those experts would want recordings so that they could verify and defend their honesty. Family Court is part of the Ministry of Justice in the UK, as is CAFCAS. So why is a standard safeguard used in for nearly 40 years in this country absent in the family court? People may claim, well, it's because the parents aren't suspects. Okay, but they're part of a Ministry of Justice procedure. They may well have had allegations made against them. It's not much of a stretch, in fact, no stretch at all, to see the benefit of a recording. You could even let the parents decide if it's recorded if you want to. To not have a recording, well, doesn't that leave things open to abuse? It harms the credibility of the process, and parents who have been lied about could be just simply fitted up. In other words, in the same way as happened to some people in years gone by who were questioned by police but had no recording to verify what was said. Recordings are just good practice and create confidence in the system. Proving your innocence and the truth should not be a risky endeavour. I've been told that using a secret recording to prove an official lie may be counterproductive. I was told this by a senior barrister. So parents are faced between a choice of that risk or letting a lie go unchallenged or attempting to challenge in court in cross-examination without relying on the evidence of a recording that you have to prove a lie but are too afraid to use. As lay people, that puts us in a terrible position. And as I said earlier, a shoplifter would have a recording supplied to them, but a worried or victimised parent with their and their child's future in doubt would not be given the same right. It's almost insanity, but there's no shortage of that in the system that many of us embroiled in. We can see errors, problems, almost wherever we look. Many of us have been falsely accused, alienated, gaslighted and more, yet the family court system does little to remedy that or provide basic standards that can be found elsewhere in the legal system. Episode 33 was another reform episode in which I discussed transcripts and bundles, the very serious problems there are with those in the court process and what can be done to improve them. And how this current state really does impact justice. Last year, I was in the High Court in a hearing, and my direct access barrister questioned a point to do with a previous hearing. The opposing barrister turned around and said that I could have requested a transcript. Now, at the time, I didn't know I was entitled to one, let alone know the process or the cost. All parents should know. There's so much of the process we are kept in the dark about for no reason, and this only serves to degrade the system and access to justice. Another example, a few months ago I was in a local court hearing with a circuit judge, and he said he was sure he would have said something in the last hearing. He was trying to recall something he had said, and he said, "I'm sure that what I would have said was," but he was wrong. I remembered that he didn't say what he thought he'd said. He misremembered. There was no transcript to show one way or the other, and it's too cumbersome to get one after the fact, and it is often hard to be effective after the fact. There must be times when an important point is at stake, only for the process to flounder without a transcript to hand or a recording. A transcript and or recording should be automatic and free at the end of each hearing and available in the bundle for the next hearing. This would serve to make hearings more transparent, which is another bonus. The second thing I want to talk about today are court bundles. I'm astonished at the poor quality of court bundles. A few examples. I've delivered crystal clear PDFs to my child's solicitor, but when they put it into the court bundle, it looked like it had been printed out on a dot matrix printer, faxed a few times for good measure, then printed at an off-center angle. It was fuzzy and not very readable. It was poorly printed, and such was the effect that a judge may not have even read it. If I was cynical, I may think that was tampering with the evidence. If I was cynical, I may think that was the solicitor's aim. And I do, in my case. Whatever the case, though, there is no excuse for doing that. These days, most documents are sent between people in electronic word processed form, so almost everything should be crystal clear and readable for the judges. Second example, because most documents are sent electronically, they should be searchable, but they're not in court bundles, they seem to be just paper form. Why is this? Bundles can contain hundreds of pages. If they're not searchable, evidence may not be found in a hearing, even if you know it's there. If somebody, a layperson, a barrister or a judge, knows something is in a bundle but they can't search for it electronically, it hampers truth and justice. Bundles should be, where possible, searchable PDFs or a similar format. School children make better documents than some of the bundles produced by expensive lawyers, yet our courts run on these bundles. Before one hearing at the High Court last year, the opposing barrister changed the order of the document in a bundle that had been largely unchanged for a few months or a few hearings. They changed that at the last minute before a High Court hearing, causing my barrister and I to have little time to make sense of our own bundle references. In my opinion, it was pure gamesmanship by the other side, yet when we mentioned it in court, the judge did nothing. If I see these holes in the system with quality of bundles and transcripts and gamesmanship, this must be happening to tens of thousands more parents, and there's no excuse for it. Why doesn't the Ministry of Justice build an app or a website for parties to share documents and agree a bundle orderly and in good time? There could be a section for documents to be uploaded that could be done in a linear fashion. You know, if you've got 6 months between a hearing, it can be done weeks or months ahead of the hearing, not at the last minute. Things can be agreed in good time, in a proper, orderly way. There's no excuse for the scramble that happens at the moment. An app or a website could also have a section for documents not agreed. It could also include video and audio links where needed. I've even heard a judge complain about the quality of a bundle in a hearing. I bet many judges find bundles hard to navigate and find them confusing. This is not a side issue. Quality bundles are key to the process of court. Yet, nothing is done to change the system. Change is needed. And just one aside before I finish on bundles, hopefully one day soon, AI will listen to court hearings similar to how Siri and Alexa work. Perhaps it could intervene in a court hearing with fact-checking or to answer questions about a bundle or a transcript. technically that is not too far away from being possible. Many parents go into the system and know nothing of bundles and transcripts. Why would they? Some of them may have debt or mental health problems and are left on their own to be intimidated and flounder with bundle preparation and lack of transcripts. The system is broken, and it is a shadowy and dark system resisting the modern world. We need to shine a light on it and improve things. We need to begin changing family law at every level for the benefit of children and good parents, and also changing the law and systems around it so that many cases don't even need to reach court. Episode 34 came out around Christmas time, so we replayed the episode from Christmas 2022 because it had ideas. You know, Christmas can be a difficult time, and we had some ideas in that episode for how to cope. So there we are, 12 days of Christmas and 12 ways of coping. The commonalities are to change your state, break negative thoughts and patterns. These are key ideas taught in the personal development world, and they help with many of life's endeavours, positive and negative. There are many negative ways to change your state, such as drink, drugs, junk food, etc. But that just amplifies the damage and can lead to worse if you are being abused for a period of years. Stick to positive ways. The family court, abuse and alienation can bring months or years of undue stress. It's amazing that the system seems to allow this and does little to avoid it. This should never happen, but until things change, we need to cope. I've found nothing works all the time, but different things work at different times. In the moment, whatever works is worth its weight in gold. As John Lennon put it, whatever gets you through the night. It's not an exhaustive list. I will do another episode sometime. If you have some suggestions, please message me. I'm on Twitter at FairParentingUK, or email me at podcast@fairparenting.co.uk, and we can include those in future episodes. Or you can add them to my Twitter timeline so that people can see them right now. Above all, don't go downhill. Your children need you. Other parents need you. There is strength in numbers. We need to support each other. If you're at the edge, please don't commit suicide. Find someone you can call, whether it's friends, family, or support service. People do care. You just sometimes need to find them. They may be busy, particularly at Christmas. It doesn't mean they don't care. They may just be distracted. Help is out there. Many people come out of things like this and look back and see some positives in what it made of them or the capacity it gave them to cope. Short of death or illness, parental alienation is as bad as it gets. There will be times when nothing works and no amount of good advice will help. Be kind to yourself in those times. Don't dwell on the negative. Stay away from the abyss and call somebody. Many times something will help. Try the things mentioned here and anything else. Explore biographies, personal development, etc. For me, this is the fifth Christmas of abuse. I can't say that your case will be over soon, but I hope that it will be. Abusers, coercive controllers and alienators are less likely to influence a teenager or adult forever. Hang in there. Children grow up, so there is likely much more time after the abuse than the period of suffering. In the end, hopefully karma will have its say. Let's stay around for our children, help each other, and get the system changed so that they and others don't have to ever go through this. Episode 35 was one I'd wanted to do for a long time, on artificial intelligence and how it may fix family law. Things move very quickly. ChatGPT in 15 years will be, well, if it can pass a bar exam now, what will it be able to do in 5, 10, 15 years' time? Many people think we're only a few years away from what Ray Kurzweil calls the singularity, when true AI will occur, conscious perhaps. But even before then, the progress is going to be breathtaking. Okay, let's have a look at one example, the medical industry. Peter Diamandis says eventually it's going to be malpractice for a doctor to diagnose without consulting AI. I hear others say soon it may be impossible for people to drive themselves without AI because it would be deemed unsafe to drive are more accident prone to drive without a computer doing the work. And we're obviously not far away from that with Teslas having the ability to do some self-driving. And medicine moves very quickly. There are over 7,000 medical papers published every day. How on earth can your doctor process those? Also, the half-life of medical knowledge is reducing rapidly. A doctor who qualified in the 1950s could practice for many years without his knowledge getting out of date. Today, a doctor who qualifies age 25 may have out-of-date knowledge by the age of 30. Progress is happening that quickly, and it's happening quickly in other fields too. Many patients at the moment use search engines to get information themselves, which they then take to see their doctor with. There's nothing wrong with that, but an AI assistant that both doctor and patient can access would be neater, possibly better, and maybe more welcome by both parties. The AI could even remove the need for a GP in many circumstances. Okay, so what of the legal profession? Maybe similar is going to happen there, with solicitors, social workers, and judges compelled to consult AI. If ever there was something that needed modernising, it's the legal profession. It is prehistoric in the way it works. I gave some ideas for reform in episodes 2, 32, and 33, and Mike Bell of the Family Court Reform Coalition covered their own ideas in episode 7. There are loads of simple, low and no cost ideas, but changing the system is like walking in treacle. The good thing is the world outside of law is changing fast, and AI may help change things from the outside in, just as it is doing in other fields. You know, for example, lawyers now use email. I bet they were one of the last to adopt that, but the changes from the outside world come in, and although there may be resistance in law, in the end it happens. It is said ChatGPT can already pass a bar exam. That is promising. AI can do so much to improve the archaic legal system. Here's just a few simple ideas. 1. Find relevant case law for parents and judges. 2. Write some of the letters we currently pay solicitors for. 3. Help parents fill out court applications. These three alone would save people thousands of pounds. Many solicitors are selling old rope, doing the same thing with many clients, but charging them each. AI is perfect for disrupting that, to bring costs down for many parents. Those are just first steps. Longer term, AI could do much more. Example 6, AI could become another expert in the courtroom to advise judges alongside CAFCAS, psychologists, social workers, etc. It could be built without bias, vested interests or incentives to prolong cases and run up costs. Point 8. AI could give court experts regular bias assessments. It could check and scrutinise expert reports and judgments for bias or flawed thinking. This alone may fix things. Just the idea that experts were being assessed would keep them on their toes. Currently we have the opposite. Experts can operate with an agenda or an inept way of working for decades with little of the scrutiny the rest of us have in our jobs. AI could silently and privately analyse things and provide guidance on ineptitude or bias or other errors with experts. Example 9. AI could bring down the cost of lawyers because AI will be that good and we will have access to the same information they do. Point 14, AI might advise government on how to improve the legal system so most parents avoid court altogether. There are many improvement ideas coming from people on this already, and AI could lend weight to this and speed change by providing analysis and cost-benefit analysis. It could also track the outcomes of cases and the effects of case outcomes on children over time. That is something that is not done at the moment. Courts have no idea whatsoever that what they decide has a good or a bad outcome. That is simply not good enough. It is unacceptable. We're at the dawn of a new age. Resistant lawyers will be like cowboys in the Wild West seeing the first cars roll into town. Change is coming. AI can level the playing field for those who can't afford lawyers. It can help courts by fact-checking and advising on case law and offering impartial and data-driven advice. It can test experts for competency and keep the system fair and up to date. There are many other ideas from people. The effect of all these ideas, AI and others, I think will deliver the change we need. We simply cannot leave it to the legal profession to change itself, as it's not known for change and it is incentivized against change. A tsunami of change is coming to the world, and family law simply will not escape it. Episode 36 was around New Year, and seems a long time ago now. It was my thoughts looking ahead to 2024. It's fantastic to see Erin Pizzey and Jan James receive their MBEs. That does not happen automatically, so well done to all of those who nominated them. It's really inspiring to see Erin and Jan recognised. Next, I wanted to talk about elections. I heard somewhere a massive number of people live in countries with elections this year. I think it was 1 or 2 billion people. Obviously, America is one, and there will be lots of stories and fireworks there for sure. In each of the countries, voters can question politicians and ask what they are doing about family law. Even if the politicians are unaware of the problems, voters can bring pressure, raise recognition and awareness that may not be there now. It will help move the needle and bring change. We all have a part to play in that, and we can all do something. In episode 7, Mike Bell of the Family Court Reform Coalition said politicians often aren't aware of issues. This year, with all the elections going on, it's a chance for hundreds of millions of people to raise awareness about family law. I also want to talk in this episode about moonshots. I've mentioned before Peter Diamandis' Moonshots podcast, and it's well worth listening to. It highlights how changes are coming in many fields in the world. I believe changing family law is a moonshot. People are working on this. We see councils recognising parental alienation now, and there are flags, t-shirts, logos and even buildings lit up in recognition of parental alienation. There are efforts to reform family law, and also podcasts, books, YouTube channels, movies, etc. People are working hard for change, and it's wonderful to see the amazing work done by so many people. Just to wrap up this short episode, I believe changing family law for the better is a civil rights struggle. Most civil rights struggles are for things that are self-evident and good, yet are resisted by many with blinkered thinking or vested interests. In the end, though, they lose, and the people fighting for civil rights win. In later years, people can take civil rights for granted, and that's fine, but until change happens, the road to it is often not as simple as it should be. Change is coming. It won't be in time to help me, but I hope it will be in time to help you and our children. We don't want them, if they become parents, to have to go through the same system we did. Episode 37 was on incentives and how bad incentives can make bad systems. I looked at various industries, including family law, and I discussed how just changing the incentives within a system, for example, family law, would naturally bring about better outcomes. Defence and space, two massive strategic industries where cost-plus contracts have been challenged and disrupted recently by far-sighted, capable entrepreneurs who can deliver better for taxpayers and innovation. I wonder if cost-plus contracts are rife across government. I actually don't know. But I really encourage you to listen to those episodes that I put in the show notes from the Moonshots podcast and all the other episodes, because, I mean, Peter talks about similar problems in the medical industry, which is his focus, or one of his focuses. And those three people put the issues a million times better than I do. But I've just tried to give you a brief explanation so that you can go and explore those podcast episodes in the Moonshots podcast if you'd like. And I'll put links in the show notes. Here's a quote from Sir James Munby, former president of the Family Division. He said, "We know that people game the system. The classic example of that is you get legal aid if there's an allegation of domestic abuse. Many of us know if one parent makes a false allegation, They can get legal aid and off you go. The lawyers are on a taxpayer-funded gravy train. A simple case can then take 4 years with lawyers laughing all the way to the bank. You may have been on the wrong end of this kind of situation. Legal aid costs a fortune. We see barristers and solicitors who must know their clients are abusive. But incentives are just too much and too juicy for these people to turn down. Why not just do another hearing or five? Even in cases where both parties are paying privately, this can happen. I'm not saying these lawyers are corrupt, or trying to fleece the taxpayer, or trying to harm good parents who pay their own legal fees. What I am saying is, even if you were to say these lawyers have no bias, no vested interest, no nastiness, no lack of empathy, or no humanity, if you were to just ignore the possibility of any of that, the incentives of the family court law game, or lawfare as it's sometimes called, are clear. Lawyers can make a mountain out of a molehill and run things as long as they can, as expensive as they can, as nasty as they can. And if you doubt any of that, I would just say, talk to people who've been in the family court, or listen to the three people I've just mentioned in the Moonshots podcast. They talk about three gigantic industries: medicine, space, and defence. Why would the same kind of incentives not play out just as badly elsewhere, such as in law? Human nature is the same, whatever the industry. If you create incentives that do not reward people for being quick, amicable, and low cost, you will likely get bad outcomes. Another way to put it is, you don't need bad people to make systems bad. You just need bad incentives. Change the incentives and the behaviour of people in the system will change for the better automatically. Episode 38 was covering messaging and how we can use messaging with our children to touch the future, especially if we're not seeing our children, and how to do that in a constructive way. In today's episode, I want to revisit an idea we spoke about way back in episode 5, which was about parental separation in the movie Interstellar. It was a great episode, thanks to Derek McDuff. I want to discuss one idea we mentioned. The reason was, I was reminded of it after I recently saw someone post on Twitter about buying toys for a child they couldn't see. I guess it was a way of touching the future or connecting with their child and looking forward to a day when they would be able to give those presents to their child. This idea of touching the future is in Viktor Frankl's book Man's Search for Meaning, which I highly recommend reading. And it's also in the movie Interstellar, in the way people message each other across space over the years. Here's a clip from episode 5 where Derek and I discuss this idea.
No, she sends him a message before that, and she technically, when she sends that message, she's technically sending it to Brand. She's like just basically telling Brand, your father died, I'm just going to tell you because nobody else is going to. Then she's about to turn off the message, and she stops and she says, to the younger Brand, did you know? Did you know about this lie? And did my father know? And that's so, and like, you know, you can tell by Anne Hathaway's performance there, like, which is, she's so good. She's a really underrated actress, that she's like, I didn't know. She, like, she starts crying. She's like, she's talking to Coop, and she's like, I had no idea about any of this. So even at that point, she was like, I don't want to talk to my dad. I'll tell Brand what needs to be told, and kind of emotionally ask this question.
It's such a painful, because she's gone through a lot. She's lost her dad, but then she thinks, oh, he knew he was not coming back. He knew he was leaving me to die. And it's just so heartbreaking for a child. And of course, he's not there to say, you know, he can't reach her until later in the film.
I find messaging helpful to me, and hopefully my child will enjoy reading them in years to come. As with any idea, it will work for some, but not for all. It may make you miss your child more, but it may be a cathartic way to touch the future and communicate with them, and it may help you. It will also give your child the gift of almost time travel, seeing how you felt and what you said to them years before. Anyway, find something that works for you and try it and see if you like it. That's all for now. It's just a short episode. It's a simple idea, but sometimes simple ideas work the best, and it has helped me. Episode 39 was about hardships, and it discussed how family court in some ways treats good parents and children worse than criminals. You can be falsely accused, treated as guilty without trial, and you may never even have a trial. You can have your children taken, you can spend your life savings trying to defend yourself and your children, and spend years of your life in trauma in the court system and still get nowhere. The effects of this can last the entirety of your children's childhoods, the best part of 20 years, or longer if you and your children still have to deal with the effects. Let's contrast that with a serious criminal, for example, a terrorist or a murderer, who may only have one trial and possibly an appeal, which will cover a much shorter period of time, and they will be given free legal help. They face a simple test. Did they commit the crime or not? In family court, the innocent can be found in a trial and still be treated worse than criminals. And the abusers can be found and nothing done. Many murderers will serve far less than the 20 years or more parents and children may suffer as a result of the family court. In Britain, the family court is run by the Ministry of Justice, but many good parents are treated worse than criminals. From the tactics I've seen used in a family court, I can see that every parent in the country is potentially at risk from what happened to me, yet they just don't know it, as awareness of what happens in family court is minimal. Only when a parent gets sucked into the system will the horror dawn on them, but by then it may be too late. You don't have to be a bad parent or do anything wrong to be treated worse than a criminal in Britain. Many criminals know they are guilty, so won't have the sense of grief, loss, injustice, or fear for their children that many parents do in the family court. In prison, you can even get your sentence halved for good behaviour, whereas in the family court, you can have time with your kids halved, even though you've done nothing wrong. I think many parents would rather go to jail for a few years than live with a couple of decades of abuse, injustice, and alienation. Indeed, jail may seem like paradise by comparison. I don't know why the Ministry of Justice doesn't see that and correct it so families have a better time. All they have to do is compare the plight of criminals with that of good parents and children in the justice system. Okay, so that's episode 40, in which we've run through episodes 31 to 39. I hope you enjoyed listening to those. I can't believe we've reached episode 40 already. Thanks to all the guests and listeners. I get letters from some of you. I have interactions with some of you, and it's just so helpful to me. And I know that some of you find the show helpful. It's so encouraging. And here's to the next 10 episodes. And as I always say, if there's somebody out there who wants to take over presenting the show, whether it's one episode or a lot of episodes or permanently, let me know. I'm not the important person in this podcast. I believe the podcast is important because of the guests and the listeners. So if you want to present this, I'm happy to step back. But if nobody does step forward to take this over, well, I'll have to keep doing it. But thanks very much again for listening, and here's to the next 10 episodes. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.